So, good evening. This oral history interview is being conducted by the Area 53 Archives Committee to pass on the history of our fellowship through the shared memories of one of our members. No duplication or reuse of this interview beyond sharing on platforms of the Area 53 Archives Committee is authorized without the express consent of the member being interviewed and the Area 53 Archives Committee. Today, we are interviewing Stephen S. from Columbus, and his sobriety date is May 11th, 1977, and his home group is the Three Legacies Group in Columbus. Today's date is May 17th, 2021. Thanks for joining us, Steve. And
thank you.
We're going to jump in and focus on the home group for this part of the interview. Could you please describe how you approached your first home group?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So my first home group was the Shakers Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Glendale, California. We rented a storefront in a commercial district and had 18 meetings a week in there. It wasn't a clubhouse. It was just a meeting space. We had meetings 6 mornings a week at 7 a.m. and then 7 nights a week at 8. And then there were 3 or 4 other kind of special meetings, special purpose meetings during the week. And I chose it because it was the first AA meeting where I'd felt truly comfortable and part of. I didn't come directly to AA. When I stopped drinking, my wife and I got active in a church, which gave my life a spiritual basis, which I hadn't had before. And through that church, I was introduced to AA by members of AA who knew untreated alcoholism when they saw it, and they began to do that. And my work and my family schedule made evening meetings difficult at the time. And someone suggested I give a try to this morning meeting, and it was convenient because it was on my way to work. So I said, sure, I'll do that. And the first time I went to that meeting, now I'd been bouncing around to some meetings trying to find it because I decided I should have AA. It was just one of those comfortable feelings, you know, and which I hadn't had in some of the other meetings. One sitting there, he was sitting next to me actually at the table about having had a head cold the night before, and spending a couple of hours in the cough syrup section of a 24-hour market in Hollywood, California, holding and looking carefully, reading the labels of all the different cough syrup, trying to find out how much alcohol they had, and carefully, and said he was having this debate about whether, can I have cough syrup with alcohol in it? And, well, I shouldn't, but if I don't have alcohol in it, then it really won't work, so I probably ought to. If I want to get better, I had to have, and he just went on like that for a few minutes and ended up saying after about an hour and a half, he walked out of the store and didn't buy anything. And I got to tell you, that was the first moment in my life that I understood alcoholism, because I related, said, this guy thinks like I think, and so did everybody else there. So I joined that meeting and it stayed my home group for the rest of the time that I lived in Los Angeles after I got sober until I moved to Columbus in 1989.
Great. Can you recall the format you used at your first home group and kind of maybe give us an idea of the number of folks that attended on a regular basis?
Sure, I can. The one of the nice things about the Zoom area is I've been able to go back to that group and see how they're doing with it. But the format was a format that's pretty common in Southern California. So you'd have the leader of the meeting, it's used in different terms, but leader was kind of the chairperson of the meeting and did the lead. So that we had there on the morning, we had 18 meetings a week. Each meeting had a secretary that was elected by the attendance at that meeting. And they served that group for 6 months at a time. And their job was, they were a secretary for 1 day a week for 6 months. And their job was to get people to lead the meeting. Now, when you lead the meeting in that group, as well as many Southern California groups, what you do is you do 10, 15 minute kind of qualifying. You tell enough of your story. Sometimes people would just talk about what's going on with them, but most of the time it was what we'd call a mini lead now. So the secretary would turn it over to the lead. You'd choose the readers, you'd do the seventh tradition, and then you'd tell some part of your story, and then you'd select a topic. So And so it wasn't like who has a topic. It was the chairperson selected a topic. Sometimes they said, I don't have a topic, talk about whatever you want to. But it was the chairman's choice on what the topic was. And then the chairperson or the leader then selected who shared. It wasn't popcorn style, and it wasn't raise your hand. It wasn't go around the room. It was that person said, okay, well, the topic today is sponsorship. All right, Terry, you want to share with us? And you'd pick the people. People could raise their hands, but the format was to let the person who was chairing the meeting. And then we just had sharing sessions, sharing meetings. It was a 2 or 3 minute time limit. As I heard it in a Southern California style meeting just recently, it says, we have a 3 minute time limit, but we want you to get it done in 2 minutes, so talk fast. You know, so it was that kind of same approach. So we didn't have it when I was there, which has now been, I left there in 1989, so it's been a long time. They didn't have a hard and fast timer, but we tried to keep it short. And then at the end of the meeting, lead would then select somebody else to read one of two closings, either the promises or a vision for you, the last couple of paragraphs of page 164. And then we close the meeting at that time with the Lord's Prayer.
Can you tell me about your experiences with your other home groups?
Yeah, home groups been an interesting journey for me, because when I left Southern California, and I'd say that, so the Shakers meeting, I was active in it. It was an active group, and I did group service stuff, but that was the extent of it. When I moved here to Columbus in 1989, I didn't realize at the time, but Shakers was my AA, and it didn't travel with me. When I got here, the changing in formats and some of the practices and meetings, I got resentful over it, and I had things. I was also traveling a lot. And so I had a tough time settling in and finding a routine. I ended up selecting the Stop and Grow as a home group in the early 90s. Because it was convenient, I could usually get away for lunch once or twice a week, so I could get to those meetings. And I was, traveling a lot, so doing anything in the evening became problematic. So I was a member of Stop and Grow, but I really was, it was more a home meeting than a home group. For me, I mean, I was there. I did, chair some of their meetings. I was just a coffee maker for one of the meetings for a while, one day a week, and I did some of that stuff. But it was really just more of a meeting. I could make some commitments to. And then in the 90s, I was in and out of work a lot because I'm just so damn competent. And my schedule changed. I mean, I'd get another job and my schedule changed. So I really didn't ever settle into a home group for much of the 90s. And I'm fortunate because in that same period of time, that decade, I was answering the phones on Saturday morning at central office, and I was doing correctional meetings, and then ended up being active on the correctional committee. And in all honesty, service work replaced the home group for me for the 90s, almost by necessity. But at the end of that period of time, I was working nights. Noon to nine. It was the worst schedule you could possibly hope for an AA meeting, because you're exhausted in the morning. So the early morning meetings you could do, but you couldn't do a noon meeting. You couldn't do an evening meeting. So the only day that I didn't work nights was Sunday. And I worked during the day on Sunday, and I got off at 6 o'clock, and it was in Grove City. It was where I was working. And so I said, I need to find a meeting I can go to on a regular basis. And so I started stopping by Three Legacies on the way home from work, because it was a 7 o'clock meeting between where I lived and where I worked. I did that. And at first I went because it was just a convenient meeting and I got to do it. But it was such an active group, that I ended up joining it because I found myself reconnecting to AA. I mean, I was doing corrections work and I was doing central office, so it wasn't like I was off in the wilderness on my own, but I really didn't feel that part of AA that I had felt sometimes. So I ended up joining Three Legacies in 2001. I've been a member of it for about 20 years now, and it's remained my home group.
Describe about how your home group conducts a group inventory and or a group conscience.
Yeah, we do something, again, one of the things that attracted me to the group. So we do conduct a group inventory once every couple of years. It's held as a Saturday night potluck at somebody's home. We usually use the checklist in the AA group pamphlet. We've used that. Is it the Grapevine has another checklist? We've used another one at times too. And we generally would ask somebody from outside the group to come and facilitate the inventory process. Now, that format, I don't know that the pandemic has sort of separated me from the group. So I don't think we've done anything for the last couple of years, but they might have done something in the meantime. But that format is based upon the way we do our group consciences, because our group consciences are held quarterly at a member's home, a potluck, a Saturday evening just before the assembly, a quarterly meeting just before the Saturday before the assembly normally. And we get together, and Legacy is one of the things that keeps me attracted to A3A, just how active they are in the overall service structure. So we make an effort as a group to have a representative on every standing committee, a group representative on every standing committee. It's sometimes, like right now, you can't do that because things are there, but we would have that, and that our group consciences, each representative would report on that standing committee, and then we would have a fairly wide-ranging discussion about what the issues for that committee is, in order not to vote and tell a person what they ought to think, but to help better inform him by sharing him or her, by sharing the experiences we've all had there. And one of the nice things about the group is almost the people who've been there for a while have generally served on every one of the, I think, fun group conscience process, because whatever is going on, there can be something going on in, like right now in the accessibilities area. And so our group will get, everybody in the group has an opportunity to contribute to that. And the group is actively participating with the standing committees. That's the way we do a group conscience. And the other thing, the group is strongly supports and encourages group members to stand for office positions in the area. So we've got a lot of active involvement in the area. And so the group consciences are good, because we pretty much are going to talk about anything that's going on. Anybody wants to know something. And it turns out, if you know any Three Legacies people, that we are not a shy, we're not a shy group when it comes to expressing our views on things. And it sometimes is it really does show that unity is not the same as unanimity. I mean, it's we can have different opinions of stuff, and we can work out those things. And there have been some group consciences that got pretty nasty at times, where somebody would lose it, but we'd always come back together and we do that. So that's the way we do both the group consciences, and we use that same basic process when we do inventories.
Well, that's a great segue. Can you share about, maybe not share about, a controversy or an issue that you can recall that your group had to wrestle with, but and came together, had some decision around?
When you suggested this question might be asked, I was thinking, could you ask me what controversies we haven't gotten involved in? what's going on in AA that Three Legacies hasn't made more interesting? I mean, there are some, we've been involved, like I mentioned, in most of the things that are going on in AA, in the service structure in AA, whether it's the General Service Conference issues, the whole things that are going on there, as well as the individual standing committees and stuff that are going on. For example, if we were holding a group conscience, we would be talking about this process. What somebody would be reporting that this is how they're doing it, and talking about this and getting some feedback and input for the representative. We also have had controversy around what basically really are outside issues, but they affect us. The one that I remember that was the most difficult and that cost us a lot of division and divisiveness in the group was, and this is 30 years ago, but it was smoking in meetings.
Okay, it was.
And that whole issue of, what's the right thing to do, and what our group conscience decided on, which is the same criteria we used for dealing with the pandemic, was we would not take a position ourselves on the healthfulness of smoke. We'd do what the church or our landlord said the pandemic to be following the protocols. I don't think as a group we would have said, Well, if we had a landlord to say, do whatever the hell you want to, that we'd have done that. But we basically said, this is not an AA issue. It's an outside issue, and we'll work that as an outside issue. So that gets a little controversial because not everybody, even in the group, agrees with that position. But that turns out to be our group conscience. Right now, there's stuff we will, in our group conscience, be discussing some of the stuff that took place at the conference. I mean, there's stuff around the Big Book that's going to be controversial. And it's just, you know, and we have a lot of people who've been in the position to understand it, but we will certainly dig into that. And on all of these issues, I mean, things that whatever your position is on how the Big Book ought to be altered or not altered, our members will be expressing that at the assembly. And it won't be the Three Legacies position, but all of us will do that. And we have some differences of opinion like that. So just pretty much anything that could be controversial in Central and Southeast Ohio, Three Legacies.
What AA literature would you suggest to a newcomer or interested AA that helps explain or better understand the home group?
You know, first of all, I mean, the most obvious one is the AA group pamphlet. That Joe's holding it up there, and if I let him, he'd read it to us right now. So, but that is an incredibly informative pamphlet. It's basically a fairly thorough, frequently asked questions. If you have a question about home group, and what do you, something that addresses it in most cases. I would also recommend to somebody who is trying to understand home groups that they take that pamphlet and review it with preferably a sponsor or a small group of people who've been through that. And so you can talk through and hear some experiences and not just hear the theory, not just hear what the collective conscience of the General Service Conferences arrived at is okay to put in there and to cover. So the other book I strongly encourage people to consider is the Grapevine book, Home Group, the Heartbeat of AA. And there's like 50 stories in there that have been published since the beginning of AA. So they're not necessarily the latest thing. They're not something that was approved in April of last year at a conference. The Grapevine is not a censored thing. People are entitled to their opinion. Now, they've got editors who are careful about what goes in there, and they're not going to put in, we should be serving beer in meetings stories. I mean, you know, they're going to be doing it. But there's an awful lot of opinions. And I look at it like if you take the combination of the pamphlet itself, the conference-approved pamphlet, which I think was just as a frequently asked questions thing and review that with people. And then you read those stories, you get the theory and the practice. Because what the Grapevine stories, this is how people are actually doing home groups. And they're all not doing them the way the pamphlet suggests. Doing them in the same way that I would interpret, understand, we are on the tradition of autonomy comes through when I read Grapevine stories. So, you know, and so we have this meeting we've been doing on Wednesday nights, and one of the weeks we do is on unity. And we predominantly have turned to Grapevine stories as ways of triggering some pretty good sharing sessions. But those two, I'd say, put the pamphlet and the Grapevine book and get a sponsor or at least somebody with more experience. Don't figure it out on your own entirely. And then show up, start showing up and seeing. I mean, that's, I guess the other thing I'd say, if you really want to know, you have to go to group meetings. You have to see what's going on. And if you can, attend a group conference. That's another thing I tell them. If you're interested in a group, attend their group conference, because then you'll see what's going on. It's a little bit, now you get to see how the sausage is made.
So you talked about the pandemic briefly. Do you want to add or share anything in addition to how that impacted you and your home group?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because last spring when this thing hit, Three Legacies out of necessity went to a Zoom format. And we were that way, I don't know, 6-8 weeks. I'm not sure how long, a couple of months we did it. And then when it eased up a little bit and they got some standards and the church said that here's the rules, you can hold a small meeting. We had a group conscience, not an in-person group conscience, but a Zoom discussion. As a group, we arrived at a decision that we were going to go in person and follow the protocols. And we had a whole plan on it. Not all of us could attend in person And I was one of them who could not. I at my age, I wasn't going to take that extra risk. But what I loved about the way we handled it is we did a couple of things. We considered the possibility, well, let's do an in-person meeting and let's also do a Zoom meeting at the same time. So you can come to Three Legacies either way. We weren't thinking hybrid at that time, but as a group, we said, no, we're going to present a single face. We are going to present to the AA world the Three Legacies as an in-person meeting. We don't want to confuse people about how we carry the message. We carry the message this way. And we will follow all the protocols. We'll do everything we can to protect everybody. And they try to do that. So that was one issue is we did. What I liked about the way we handled it is while some of us wouldn't be able to attend, we decided as a group, we were unified in the fact that that's what the group conscience decided to do. And we are comfortable with it. There were several of us who couldn't attend or wouldn't attend under those circumstances, not because, and it wasn't out of resentment, it was just out of reality. And so what we decided to do, and we talked about it at that group conscience, is to start another meeting, to start a Zoom meeting. And we had a discussion about, well, should we start it on Sunday night? And the group talked about it. And the decision was, no, we don't want to start another Zoom meeting on Sunday night because then it'll be competing. So we picked a night, and it turns out to be Wednesday night, and it's a Zoom meeting. And it was based upon the same premise of Three Legacies that we're going to talk about the Three Legacies. We're going to do that. We do recovery, unity, service rather than the steps, traditions, and concepts. And we do predominantly grapevine articles as the source of our reading material. But we are going through all of those things. So we said we're going to do a Zoom meeting that gives us the opportunity to continue to focus on the Three Legacies. While we're doing that, until we can get back together, and so that was the decision, and so we've had the two meetings that have been going. It's now apparent that we're getting to the point where we can get back together, where those of us who haven't been attending in person are going to be attending in person with the vaccination stuff, and so in fact, we've already done it. I went to one of the meetings. I haven't been back to a second one, but I'm closer to being able to kind of free up Sunday nights again. And what's interesting is that Zoom meeting on Wednesday nights is going to continue. It's called the Columbus 1728 group, and 1728, in case you're mathematically inclined, is 12 times 12 times 12. So that's what and those are the things we do. So we do recovery, unity, service, and sponsorship. We rotate the theme and do that. We're going to continue doing that, at least for the near term. I mean, for this year and next, I don't know that it'll have a long term, and as well as Three Legacies. So we sort of drifted apart, but we drift apart in a unified fashion. We made a unified decision. Those of us who weren't attending in person, we sort of lost contact with them, although a couple of the other people are attending the Wednesday meeting, so we stayed in touch. But I think as a group, we handled it based upon our understanding of the traditions. We were autonomous. We had a group conscience about it. We were respectful of the health department protocols. And while the group conscience was probably a little bit more comfortable with the risk of those protocols than some of us were, we soon, I know I'll be back there. If probably in June, I've got some other things going on, but I'll probably be back attending regularly there now that I'm vaccinated and everything. So I think the way we handled it, it did create a change, but we did it in a unified way, and we'll come back together. And as a result, I think we've stayed a unified group, and now we've also got a second meeting going. Not that group's meeting, but a second meeting that is important, which may turn into, depending upon what the area decides to do, it could turn into a virtual home group of some sort. So that's where it is. So foreseeably, we will be all back in the same room again quickly. So.
And can you tell me, what would you tell a newcomer or an interested AA about the significance of being a part of a home group?
Well, I'm going to tell you, here's as strong a statement as I can give you. I think active participation in active group and sponsorship are the two things that are going to make AA continue to live. If we aren't actively involved, and the main reason that I look back and say I want to be an active member of an active group, because that keeps me in touch with AA as a whole. And, because it is easy for a guy like me to read a few books and say a few prayers and I got it. I understand all this. I, I've been around long enough to understand what needs to be understood, and we can go there. But if you're actively involved in a group that is actively participating in the general service structure, or if somewhere, then you can then you're going to stay part of AA, and AA has an opportunity to do it. The other thing, I think one of the things I was talking to my sponsor about this week on home group was when he came in, which was the same, roughly the same time I came in here in Central Ohio. He said there, it was almost common practice that you picked a home group because it was your sponsor's home group. You know, you picked a sponsor and a home group at the same time. That's the way you did that stuff, you know, and a lot of that is lost, the division and stuff. So I can't say enough. I mean, the idea of common welfare, I've said in, you know, myself, I think my spiritual awakening as a result of the step is that the common welfare should come first. That's it, you know, and so how do we carry that out? How do we live that way? It's a nice principle, but it really is what we should be living, is for the common welfare. And a lot of the issues that we're facing in AA right now are around that issue. So what is that common welfare? Well, I think if you're a member of a home group that has a commitment to that, you're going to work it out. And you'll learn, as I said to somebody, I've been at a general service conference, and I used this expression earlier tonight, but the problem with being at the general service conference is you really do see how the sausage is made, you know, and it isn't pretty, but the principles work. And I think if you're not actively involved in a place where it's not all touchy-feely, lovey-dovey, and you're actually, everybody's saying, this is what I believe, how we should be principled, you will work it out. And you will work it out, you know, if you're all committed to that. You can't do that. You can't do that yourself, by yourself. You can't do that by running any kind of show. So I think a home group, spiritual growth, because I've come to understand the common welfare comes first. I've come to figure out how to get comfortable with not having to be right. and accepting and not having things go my way, and being very comfortable that's okay, that that's the way it should go. And that's spiritual problem. You want to practice these principles of common welfare. If you want AA to be unified, we can't be unified if we don't have unified groups. You know, so we can do all we want, but unity is worked out in the group. That's how you learn what it is. And then you can carry that message to the rest of AA. A group can do that better than an individual can.
Well, thank you so much, Stephen. I will now appreciate you taking the time to answer the questions and do this for the wrap session.
My pleasure.
And I want to thank Ian for having us, and Marcia, and I will turn it back over to you guys.